It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with the Adjutant General of the Wisconsin National Guard. Major General Paul Knapp is here, presented before a legislative study committee looking into the Guard's sexual misconduct procedures. The committee meets again next month. We get an update on this work. Join in 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Major General Paul Knapp, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. It's always great to be here on WPR, and I appreciate the opportunity to update your listeners.
Yes. So the Guard's Bureau's Office of Complex Investigations officially closed its review of the Wisconsin Guard's sexual assault response and prevention protocols back in February. Are you seeing enough improvements since the investigation first started in 2019?
Well, Kate, we can always continue to improve. So I wouldn't say I'm seeing enough improvements, but I am happy with where we're at since this all kicked off back in 2019. We've had great success. I think you mentioned in one of your lead-ups, my number one priority as it relates to sexual assault and harassment is to create an environment where anyone in this organization, regardless of status, will feel safe and protected in reporting. And I think we've seen that in the data over the last couple of years.
Well, break down a bit of that data and 21 recommendations in five areas. What stands out?
Well, the 21 recommendations that they had were across a number of different lines of effort. And the big thing that stands out to me in terms of the OCI is it took us about a year. So midway through 21, we were complete with all of the procedural changes that we needed to make in order to be in compliance with all state and federal rules and regulations. And that was a critical first step. Basically the blocking and tackling of getting this right. And then, as you mentioned, we finally had the last inspection of all of our programs in December of 21, and it actually closed out with a letter from the National Guard Bureau to the governor in early fiscal year 22, or early calendar year 22 this year. And so the big thing next is the prevention part. We talk a lot about sexual assault prevention and response. The response piece is the piece that was largely addressed by the Office of Complex Investigations investigation. And lately, I'm happy to report we've been able to secure additional full-time positions directed specifically at that prevention piece across the state. It was a result of the Independent Review Commission that was done across the military. There were a number of findings that specifically addressed the National Guard. And as you know, the National Guard, citizen soldiers and airmen, a lot of that prevention workforce was part-time or those citizen soldiers and airmen. And so what we've been able to do recently through that, as a result of that study, is we've gotten additional positions from the National Guard Bureau to work on the prevention piece.
What happens in these new jobs in the prevention piece? What are the directives?
Got it. Well, hey, I'll just run down what the positions are. So basically, we're adding an additional full-time sexual assault prevention specialist, an overall prevention program manager for the state, a full-time suicide prevention specialist, and a domestic violence prevention specialist. And they all generally relate to that prevention workforce. In addition, specifically for the Wisconsin sexual assault program, we've added an additional full-time brigade level sexual assault response coordinator and two additional full-time victim advocates who work directly with any of the victims in the sexual assault cases. And then another one, which just got added this last week, is we'll be receiving another position, a full-time position, for a dedicated sexual assault, domestic violence, and harassment attorney, which will be able to advise commanders, as well as help us process these cases, which, as you can imagine, are extremely complex. And a lot of times, just the legal processing alone can take months. So all of those are great steps forward where we'll be able to get out in front of this. In the military, we say left of bang or left of boom. And that's where we really want to be. We want to be able to create an environment of dignity and respect and a culture. And as the commander of the Wisconsin National Guard, I view setting the culture of our organization as my number one priority.
We have Major General Paul Knapp with us, leads the Wisconsin National Guard as we look at the work to prevent sexual assault and harassment, efforts to navigate local laws and jurisdiction. We'll talk about that. Join in 800-642-1234. We continue this conversation ahead. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on the work of the Wisconsin National Guard on initiatives to prevent sexual harassment and violence. Also, we take stock of the changing missions of the Guard in these times, standing up COVID testing for so long, filling staffing shortages as certified nursing assistants, helping as poll workers in the past. Join in on the role of the Wisconsin National Guard. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Major General Paul Knapp is with us now and stays with us. I want to just flesh out one thing here that you just touched on earlier. You know, unless members of the National Guard are deployed or mobilized, they are in a non-duty status and they fall outside what's called the Uniform Code of Military Justice. How does that non-duty status complicate sexual assault and misconduct cases?
Thanks, Kate. That's a great question. And it is extremely complicated. We have a number of different statuses that the service members can be on at any given time. And one of them is citizen or civilian. And so the jurisdiction in a case like that, in most cases, would fall to the local jurisdiction, local law enforcement. And in fact, all of our cases that we have in the Wisconsin National Guard are referred to local law enforcement, whether they occur on duty or off duty, whether they're in a state status or a federal status. That would be the primary investigative agency. In terms of you mentioned the Uniform Code of Military Justice. We actually have a Wisconsin Code of Military Justice, and that came up extensively during the testimony to the Legislative Review Committee a couple weeks ago, is whether or not we should update the Wisconsin Code of Military Justice. And right now, I wouldn't say that it's hindering our ability to prosecute or to administer punishment to service members. However, it was published in 2007 and hasn't received any updates since. So I think it would be a very valuable for us to take a look at the Wisconsin Code of Military Justice and see if we can or should incorporate any of the more recent changes that have been made to the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
That study committee that you mentioned here wants to draft recommendations for legislation to improve procedures for investigations. What is your recommendation to this committee about the future of putting new laws on the books here in Wisconsin?
Well, so I think the first one is to just review the Wisconsin Code of Military Justice. Mm-hmm. The second one, in terms of investigations, and this came up during the testimony, is the who investigates these allegations of sexual assault. And as I mentioned, the primary investigators are local law enforcement. If they decline to prosecute, then it would go to the Office of Complex Investigations, which we mentioned earlier, and they do an administrative investigation. One of the things that the committee brought up was the potential to have a statewide investigative body assigned to do all of these investigations. A few states out there have done it. The big thing would be to take a look at how that would fit into Wisconsin law. And that's why when you get the National Guard, what makes it so complex is that there are 54 states and territories in the District of Columbia that all have very different local rules, regulations, and laws on the books. And so it isn't a one size fits all for any of the 54.
Before we have to let you go, I want to talk about the National Guard that had played a role in helping run elections. As we get closer to November here, will voters see on-duty National Guard members at the polls in November?
Well, Kate, we were happy to be able to help ensure a free and fair election in the fall of 2020. But we are definitely not anticipating having to do that this year. We think that we're on track to have sufficient staffing across the state at the polling places. And again, free and fair and safe elections are critical to our country and our democracy. And if called, we would be ready. But right now, we're not anticipating that.
Major General Paul Knapp, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Major General Paul Knapp is the Wisconsin National Guard's Adjutant General. Up ahead, it's called the Mindset List. It monitors the cultural touchstones of young adults entering college. We talk with one of the directors of the list, which started at Beloit College nearly a quarter century ago. Join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to what's called the Mindset List, a list of cultural touchstones that shape the worldview of entering college students and possible reality check for professors and what their students have lived through and what references might benefit from more context. Thanks to Alvin in Milwaukee, by the way, for this segment idea. Join in, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Tommy Zurhellen is an associate professor of English at Marist College in New York, one of the directors of the Mindset List, which was created by one of his mentors at Beloit College more than 20 years ago. Tommy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning, Kate. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you. And before we get into the nitty-gritty here of this year's Mindset List, can you explain how the list has evolved since Marist College took it over 3 years ago?
Sure thing. It's evolved a lot. Basically, the list originated at Beloit College, which is my alma mater, class of 91. Go Buccaneers. the original director of the Mindset List was my mentor, Tom McBride. He retired several years ago, and he thought of me here at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York, as a worthy successor to the list. And so we've made some changes. You know, the list used to be a fun kind of trivia list for people to look at college students, but we've kind of flipped the perspective. So now it's really focusing on what students really care about in their world.
What students really care about. Everyone has different backgrounds and unique interactions with the world they live in. Why does categorizing or synthesizing or making lists matter?
Well, I think it's a great way to find common ground between generations. You know, I think the word on the street is lately that younger people don't really care about anything. But of course, if you teach college like I do here in Poughkeepsie, you know that's just not true. They might care about different things or in things in different ways. So the list is a great way. It's kind of like our top 10 list of common ground and things that might surprise you about our incoming first-year students.
Is the list a springboard for classroom discussions, for campus conversations?
Yeah, you hit it right on the head there, Kate. So the list now, you know, it's more than just a trivia list. A typical item of the old list used to be, you know, students never saw Cal Ripken Jr. play baseball, which, you know, let's face it, students probably don't care much about. But now we're trying to get to the heart of the matter. And yeah, we have, along with each list item, we have support material, further reading to really spark those conversations between students, between students and their professors, and even between students and their parents, you know, sending their students off to college. They probably have a lot of questions too. So it's a great way to find common ground with college students and see what they really care about.
What are some of those big takeaways from this year's mindset list? Give us a tour.
Yeah. So, you know, the newer Marist list is, this is our third time doing it. Basically, we use a top 10 format following different disciplines. And what struck me about this list, perhaps the pervading theme is not just COVID, but COVID fatigue. Students, you know, not perhaps feeling the physical effects of COVID in their daily lives, but that mental fatigue is still very much a part of their lives. The good news is our students, younger people, are much better at identifying mental health issues than perhaps older generations are. So that's a good tonic. But we find a lot of common ground in this list too. So for instance, current events, everybody knows about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And this year, you know, we compared students of today, of this year, with students growing up in the 50s and 60s, you know, the duck and cover generation. And we found a lot of common ground, you know, the idea that global conflict is, you know, feels at least just a couple of steps away. Of course, now in our digital world, the effects of that are going to be different, but the feelings are very, very similar.
What about, the digital world and about the social distancing that has been such a new norm in recent times? How has that been viewed on the mindset list?
So the social distancing, you know, students are much more used to it because of their dependence on social media and their devices. So I think it was the older generations that had a bigger problem with isolation. But of course, for anybody, isolation can bring mental health issues as well. And so we're finding a lot of students kind of dealing with the resurgence, like how to gain those social skills, because let's face it, that's what you do in college besides going to class. You're learning how to deal with other people and collaborate and connect and things like that. So we're going to see how that plays out.
Stepping back for a moment, this list, as I understand, isn't a scientific survey. Is that a barrier to being accepted in academia circles and being able to further what you're finding here and perhaps publishing, the publishing potential of the mindset list?
Right. That's a really good question, Kate. So we weren't, when we started the Marist mindset list 3 years ago, we knew very well that perhaps our scientific capabilities, you know, just leaning on a lot of anecdotal information from our students and other professors' students might not be, you know, judged as an academic, purely academic piece. But we did want to lend some credence to the issues facing our students today in a more, let's say, academic arena. One of the reasons why you go to college is to learn how to debate, to connect, to argue with other people about issues. And this list gives, you know, the students, you know, a set of criteria that can they can actually have, you know, intelligent conversations on. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. This is not an academic list by any means. You're not going to find it in the PMLA or something like that. But we still stand by the effects that we got a lot of, you know, anecdotal information, as I said, from our students. And, you know, 3 years in a row, it surprises us every year. So we really like it.
Mm. At home, I understand, at a liberal arts college, the mindset list. I'm going to just reintroduce you, Tommy Zurhellen, associate professor at Marist College, one of the managers of the mindset list, this annual guide to what cultural touchstones and concerns are on the minds of incoming college students. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you remember the origins of this list at Beloit. Tommy, one of the findings from the list is that while college students might be more aware of sustainability issues like fast fashion, they're not necessarily taking action. What did you find there?
Yeah, so, you know, no one's going to be surprised that our incoming students know a lot more about sustainability and sustainability issues than we do, older generations. But what surprised us is students really aren't doing anything about it. They're still kind of latched to the cheapest buy and the quickest buy and trends and social media influencers to really make that change and head towards a more sustainable, you know, life, a sustainable future. So while they know a lot more than we do about these things, they haven't acted on it yet.
And for context, Facebook was founded in 2004, the year that many of these incoming college students were born. How helpful is that as you talk about these issues around social media?
Well, again, you know, finding common ground. So for somebody like me, you know, social media is Facebook. You know, I use Facebook all the time. But, of course, our students now see Facebook as something, you know, a dinosaur might use. They're probably right. And they're, you know, they're fleeing Facebook in large numbers to go to TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and the latest social media platforms. So while we see, you know, Facebook is only 18 years old, the same age as our incoming class, they see it as 1,000 years old, even though it's only as old as they are. It's really interesting.
What have students said about social justice, about Black Lives Matter? How do they frame that?
That's the interesting thing. So as a college professor, one of the things you got to do is, you know, students have ideas and opinions, but they might not be able to voice them yet. And so, you know, things like Black Lives Matter, social justice issues, things like that, they have opinions, but they really haven't found a way to formulate those opinions as a part of a debate or something like that. So one thing we're seeing is students obviously very passionate about these social justice issues. We saw it in the recent election here in the Hudson Valley. But at the same time, they're really kind of struggling, as all students do, to voice those opinions.
Tommy, how should college professors, or parents for that matter, use this mindset list? How do you want them to put it to use?
Yeah, so, you know, I think when people read the annual mindset list about the mindset of our incoming class, they're going to be surprised about two things. One, about the issues that students care about, but they're also going to be surprised that, hey, they care about the same things we care about, just maybe in different ways. So that's a great way to just talk about the issues that everybody cares about. You know, the language might be a little bit different. Facebook is a great example. But really, the issues are really the same, and we need to recognize that.
I think what you're saying also, that generational divides could be helped by more open collaborative communication and more information exchanges here.
Yep, and just honest communication in a forum that where everybody's comfortable. You know, the old list was, you know, let's face it, it was kind of a divider. You know, it was basically for older generations to look at the younger generations and see what they don't know, what they have not experienced and things. But we wanted the Marist mindset list to kind of be a connector, you know, finding common ground and, you know, working out that language, as you said, Kate, to really talk about the issues we all really care about.
Tommy, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Tommy Zurhellen is an associate professor of English at Marist College in New York. He's an author, one of the directors of the Mindset List, which was created by one of his mentors at Beloit College more than 20 years ago. Just ahead, we get some pointers for preserving the fall harvest with advice on canning, fermenting, and dehydrating food. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.